laid low, then I brought that dog on.
Hello!
Welcome to Talking Tripe and Twaddle!
Erin, you alright?
Oh yeah, very well, very
well. I'm Chris
well.
Brown.
I'm Oriel.
And I'm Paul. And we're back again to talk to you about wonderful and interesting topics from the history of our wonderful world.
That's nice. That was a nice introduction.
Yeah, it was.
I thought, you know.
It was. We haven't got a sponsor yet.
No, we haven't, but I've got an idea. Maybe if we promoted some brands, they might take us under their wings, you know, so like potential sponsorship for the future.
Well, yeah, it's an idea.
If we give a bit of free advertisement.
Yeah, they might come on board.
Yeah, they might.
So, Talking Tripe and Twaddle is not sponsored by or endorsed by
Chuck Norris Action Jeans.
Hey!
And look at him go.
I think these are the jeans for me.
Durable.
Because you know what? They won't bind your legs.
There's nothing worse than a pair of jeans that bind your legs.
Well, I find that. I hate it. I hate having
not like them shitty Primark ones that rip up the arse after 2 wears either.
Well, it's funny you should say that. These are very durable jeans.
I've experienced this before. Do you know what? If you buy cheap, you buy twice.
In public?
Oh, yeah, a few times.
Is that where you're slut dropping?
That's when I'm slut dropping when I'm doing splits for a laugh.
Cartwheeling through market hall.
Yeah, cartwheeling through lie.
Well, let me just give you a quick insight into these action jeans. They were developed by Chuck, especially for fighting in his action movies. They have a great style western look.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, for your hoedowns and
all
about
the western look.
Your barn dances. And the secret is they have an hidden innovative gusset.
Oh, my.
Which allows for greater movement without binding or ripping.
How does the hidden? How does that work? A hidden gusset?
Well, it's hidden. It's secret.
Who knows?
Who knows how it works? Chuck's not going to give away his
I don't understand
secrets,
the hidden gusset.
Well, don't ask me. Maybe I'll share the advert with you.
Yeah.
And maybe you can spot. Maybe it's like spot the ball.
Yeah.
Spot the balls. Anyway, they're only 1995. Satisfaction is guaranteed.
Guaranteed?
Yeah, according
well,
to
no that. One's going to argue with Chuck, are they?
No.
Well, not really, yeah. Can I have my money back?
Roundhouse kick to the face.
Yeah.
So there you go. Just an idea.
So we are fully endorsing.
We're endorsing Chuck.
Chuck's specialised fighting jeans.
Yeah, Chuck's
fighting
not endorsing
jeans. And that's a technical term as well,
fighting jeans.
So if you're one of these, you like a few beers at weekend out in town and find yourself getting a bit of rumble tumble.
So you're trying to karate kick someone after 10 pints, you split your kecks wide open.
Yeah. Or, exactly. if you're like me and you like to do the split, slut drop, cartwheeling when you've had a drink.
Last thing you want is roundouts kicking someone to the chops and your spuds falling out for all to see.
You get that cool breeze.
Yeah.
Although it is quite liberating.
So, because nobody wants to finish somebody off with a choke slam with a meat and veg hanging out, do they?
No.
You know, I can't think of anything worse.
No worse than nippy bollocks.
Oh, bloody choke slam. Anyway, we're going off.
We'll put a link on the Facebook page and all that. So, if you are interested in that specific brand of legwear,
there
you go. Direct link.
When you buy them, just reference that you heard them on Talking Tripe and Twaddle.
Yes.
And then they'll come to us with large checks.
When you purchase them, put in voucher code Talking Tripe and Twaddle and you'll get absolutely 0% off.
So anyway, who are we talking about today, Christopher?
Well, this is a very exciting story this week.
Oh, yeah,
I'm excited and I hope you are because this is probably the greatest con man of all time. Yeah. He's a right sneaky bugger.
He really is.
Smooth operator.
Yes, most definitely.
He's one of these. Very dishonest, very naughty, probably caused a lot of hurt over the years.
Yeah.
But you just can't help but like him.
No, do you know what? He's very cunning, very clever.
There's certain elements of his life.
I think you're quite drawn to that element of his personality because he's obviously quite articulate.
Yeah, and I think sort of in later life, when he's not swindling average Joes, but he's sort of going after the big corporations, then I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Fuck them.
Yeah. Victor Lustig, as he was more commonly known in later, as we'll find out, he had numerous aliases.
I think at the count, the last count was 47
aliases.
Yeah. So I'm going to now list them all for you.
No, you're not. Born in 1890 in Czechoslovakia.
Well,
ish.
Again, ish. Yeah, again.
Well, maybe the Czech Republic nowadays.
Yeah. So some say Austria-Hungary.
I think that's what it was. Borders have changed.
Yeah,
the
lines
have changed.
People have moved the lines
on
the map.
The landscape has changed, hasn't it, over the years?
Yeah, he was born in a little village or town called Hostyn.
Hostyn?
Ooh.
Pronunciation probably incorrect. But it was a lovely little village arranged around a Baroque clock tower.
Was it?
Yes, it was.
Oh, you've been doing
In the shadow of the Crocknose Mountains.
Ooh.
The Crocknose Mountains.
Very nice. Well, his parents separated at 8. Now, that didn't happen much in that that era, I'd imagine. You know, there's no divorce.
There must have been,
so
it must have been really kicking off in that
age. Oh, yeah, screaming.
Oh, because it was small.
Yeah, tiny house.
And you know, they were referred to as poor peasant people, weren't they? And they're always bloody kicking off them lot.
Yeah, he needed to step up.
It's like a wedding reception in a pub function room.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Connie Club.
Guaranteed to end in a fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Pie pots being flung everywhere. Yeah. Bloody buffet everywhere. Prawn rings all over the shop.
Yeah, the prawn rings, they're just like frisbees going across the room.
Cocktail sausages flying about. Like.
He'd been promising to fix cuckoo clock for months. For months he'd been promising to do it. She keeps going outside in the garden looking at that big one.
Yeah, looking at the big Baroque clock tower.
Yeah. When you can't fit, you're fixing that clock. Fuck off. And that was life.
That was life for the young Victor, or whatever his name was.
Although his dad apparently tried to give him the best life, starting life.
Yes.
Possible.
Yeah, I believe so.
Because, like you said, they weren't from a wealthy background, and he bought the young lad a violin.
I know,
And he said he was going to send him to Vienna to be trained by some of the great violin masters of the entire world. I mean, what a start could you ask for?
That's amazing, isn't it?
He obviously saved up a few quid.
They might have turned him away, though.
Well, they might have done, but at least it was an opportunity.
Come back when you've had a wash.
Victor, however, didn't fancy this. So he ran away and lived in a brothel for 2 months.
Good lad.
In Paris, I believe. Mm.
Well, he said that he quickly whipped his way up the crime ladder. So he starts off just at like a bit of begging, which I don't really think is crime. Then he goes to pickpocket.
Pickpocket.
To burglary and street hustling. Just generally making a bit of a nuisance of himself, but just trying to make a few quid to get by.
We've come across a few people like this before, haven't we? That do the old, like the cup tricks and the card tricks and a bit of sleight of hand and all that stuff. He masters that pretty early.
He becomes quite adept at it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
However, it doesn't last that long, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Because the police return him to his father, who in turn smashed the violin over his head.
Yes, he did. And so he should.
You ungrateful bastard.
You can just see, can't you? Have some of that, you little twat.
Kicking off in the house again, wasn't it? Yeah. He got home, dad was sat in couch in front garden. Right.
Tin of Kestrel resting on his belly.
Yeah. Grabbed him by ear. Fucking ragged him in the house. You see this? This was your future. Smash it. It'd be a fair hit for smashing a violin first time.
It'd hurt that as well. Ooh. Splinters everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Strings in your eyes.
He's been shagging for 2 months.
No, he's well and truly got his end of the
He's only 13, isn't he?
Good lad. You grew up a lot quicker in them days. Well, you know what I mean? Childhood wasn't what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, from there, I think he doesn't fancy a life of order, does he?
No.
Oh, God, no.
And
because it's true to say, he's very clever.
Yes.
You know, it is reported that he's really intelligent, but he doesn't focus his talents in academic study. He focuses on the study of people.
Which I quite like that about him, to be honest.
And again, he disappears, but he's again trying that, the card tricks, you know, a bit of pickpocketing here and there. He does his apprenticeship on the street. He does a bit of time in in Switzerland, Vienna. Does a couple of months here and there, false pretenses, card tricks. Few things up his sleeve, bit of pickpocketing.
But it's amazing to think that this young lad, even though he's not had a formal education, he can speak Czech, English, German, Italian, French. You know,
he's doing all right, isn't he? He's very clever.
I think he's superb.
All them language skills, just from being on the street, travelling, going from place to place.
GTE. Graduate through experience, lad. Yeah. What is it?
University of Life.
Oh, fuck off. You always get all buggers saying that to you, don't you? Oh, I got O-levels, what O-levels? Fuck off, Grandma.
You grew up when there was a fucking industry to go and get a job in, you twat. Oh, yeah.
Enjoy your bloody pension, well.
Fuck off, like... baby boomer.
Oh, we touched the nerve.
So at 19, it's important to note as well, he took to gambling, which I guess goes hand in hand with street hustling.
He's on fruity.
He's on fruit machines, isn't yeah. he? Ultimately, though, he ended up with a scar to the face.
Well, he gets cut.
He gets cut, doesn't he?
He starts trying to chat this woman up. And I don't think he knew that she had a boyfriend.
Yeah.
But anyway, this fella turns up.
What a pill.
Not happy. Fucking pulls a blade and
scar from his left earlobe to the corner of his eye.
Side of his face, yeah.
Oh, I saw that.
You're lucky he didn't lose an eye.
I know.
Well, in a knife fight, you know, it's risky business.
Yeah. Well, he probably had some loose fitting, cheap trousers on. So was too worried about fighting back.
He couldn't do a roundhouse kick.
Exactly.
Because his legs were bound.
Exactly.
He had four legs, didn't he? They were that tight.
He documented that.
Some Chuck Norris endorsed action genes.
Exactly.
As we've said, he was a gambler, he was a cards trickster, and then this is taking him into the area of confidence tricking. You know, as an adult, he was only like 5'7", so quite diminutive stature.
I imagine him being tall.
No, well, see, I think that's a common misconception. He wasn't particularly, and he wasn't big or thickly set. You know, he's quite slim. So this is where he uses the look of being an elegant gentleman. Because he's never going to be a big, you know, like imposing, I'll give you money or I'll beat you up sort of character. Yeah. Even if he had Chuck Norris endorsed action trousers on.
Yeah.
So he uses charm and sophistication, and he sort of gets labelled as being a smoothie. Smooth talker.
Smooth operator. Just a smooth operator. Ooh, where's my wallet?
Oh, God.
He's described.
Where's all my really expensive belongings? Where are my action jeans? But he only nicked my jeans. I didn't even see that happen.
I thought I could feel a breeze.
Bollocks hanging out again.
Your bollocks.
Yep, obviously.
But yeah, in one report, it said he was as elusive as a puff of cigarette smoke and as charming as a young girl.
I tell you what, that Dave, he's bloody elusive as a puff of cigarette smoke. Where is he again?
No wonder they nicknamed him bloody Gary Benson.
So having got his look and his personality and his... You know, he's got his mojo set.
That's the thing, though, I think. Like you said, his intelligence. He's just a ragamuffin at the end of the day on the streets.
Yeah.
But he realises, he makes a few quid, and then he doesn't just go, like, spending it all. He invests in a sharp suit, because then he knows that he can start swindling people of a higher class with more money and working his way up the ladder.
Exactly. I mean, you're not going to take a load of money off trogs, are you?
Exactly.
They haven't got it to rob.
No. So he really steps up and he starts getting on the ocean liners, mixing with the higher class of society. And we're not just talking about getting on a cruise ship to, you know, ocean med.
He's not just going around med.
No, he's going transatlantic.
Oh, one of them really shit ones. She goes up and down English Channel.
Yeah, no. There's no boat tours, no river tours. He's going transatlantic. He's popping over to the US. First class, mingling with the movie stars, the barons, the baronesses.
There's a lot of new rich about at this time.
Yes.
You know, there is a lot of people making
America's booming.
Lots of money. Yeah, and they're just easy pickings to him. He just thinks, I can just take money off these. Because they're just gullible. And people were a lot gullible back in days, weren't they?
Yeah.
As we've seen before. They believe any old shite.
Yeah.
But I still think he's tweaking his trade at this point. I don't think
he's not the finished article.
He's not the finished article.
It's all about, when you're a con man, a lot of it's about assessing the target, spotting, you know, like if you're in a room full of 50 people, you've got to narrow down who looks like they would be gullible or easy to take
worth,
the money
worth
off.
Enough money and and stupid. So he's doing his bit. He's toing and froing. America, Europe.
Where's he going?
He's making up stories. New York! That's what he did every time he got on a boat.
Is it?
Apparently.
Really? I bet he was an annoying twat to be around. Where are we going, Victor?
New York! Da, 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 da. Put his arm around two nearest people, started kicking. Yeah. Kicking
in his fancy jeans.
Yeah. Where are we going? New York! Come on, girls! Come on!
Excuse me, mate. Can you tell me where this boat's going?
New York! He's toing and froing, like mixing with dog. And everywhere he's going, he's swindling people out of a few quid, dodgy bets, all kinds going on. But then, unfortunately, war comes a-knocking.
It does. Which war is it, Chris?
It is the First World War of 1918.
Excellent details.
Shit, not 1918.
1940.
Close.
Yeah.
Off the post. Better than usual.
So the four-year First World War, as it's more famously known.
The four-year war.
Yeah.
Not the Great War.
No. No.
Not the 100-year war.
No.
This
is just the four one.
Was there any extra time?
No.
There was a replay in 1939, though.
Did they have penalties?
But nobody knows what happened to Victor during the war. He seemed to have disappeared.
Well, like every good con man, you don't want to be getting, you know, your shoes muddy in a trench, do you?
Exactly.
You don't want to get your jazzy flares mucky, do you?
Exactly. Well,
they won't rip at war, would they?
No, they wouldn't.
They won't rip at war. Very durable. Like Teflon.
Teflon trousers.
Yeah, Teflon cakes.
But at the end of the war, 1918, he was picked up where he left off, stepped onto his first cruise liner to New York.
Fucking hell.
In a fine tan suit, silk shirt, yellow cane, and the Count Victor Lustig was
like
born.
He sounds like a pimp. Like, he sounds like...
Sorry, I missed a bit. Goldfish in his heels.
Do you know what? He sounds like one of those fancy dress pimps.
Fucking tan
like
suit.
That Love You Babe shot where they've got a load of, like, crap fancy dress.
That
like,
shit. Well,
Afro wig as well.
Afro wig. Afro wig. Tinsel necklace.
I'm going to
one of them
you
big gold, plastic gold chains that's actually a gold coin. Fun for all the family.
But yes, it was the birth of Count Victor Lustig.
He's not a fucking vampire.
One.
Well, basically, he's setting off to America and he's created this new alter ego where he was a count saying that his family were in political exile because of the war.
Yeah.
Their castles have been taken off them. Their lands. Their people have been removed. And so he builds himself. Because nobody's asking questions, are they? Anybody can be a count or a duchess or whatever you
when
want.
When it's been the Great War, a lot of people have been displaced. A lot of records have been burnt.
Exactly.
You know, the whole world in a
were
sort
torn
of...
apart, weren't they?
You know, state of... confusion, so you can just get away with it if you've got the big enough balls to just make something up and go with it. People will buy it.
Yeah,
he makes a friend who sometimes helps him out on these schemes, and he's known as Dapper Dan.
Dapper Dan,
sounds like a shit rapper.
Hey, he sounds like he wears a fancy pair of jeans.
He really does.
I'm sure he does. Dapper Dan, though, he has an interesting...
He's a fat mess about when it comes to clothing and the correct clothing for the right occasion.
Well, exactly. He's a former circus lion tamer.
Hey!
Standard procedure.
And a death-defying bike rider. So,
Oh, like they do in the ring.
Yeah, you know, the ride of death,
it takes some doing that. Every time I watch that, my heart's in my mouth. I think, whoa, I couldn't do that. I'd struggle. Could you do it?
Yeah, I give it a whirl.
Would you?
I've never been on a motorbike in my life, but I'll give it a whirl.
It's easy, just go fast.
Yeah.
The faster you go, the safer you are.
Yeah. Go fast and hold on.
How do you get off?
You never get off. That's the rule. It's just a constant thing. You're just constantly going insane.
Intravenous food.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to catch it in your mouth, my love.
But he's doing really well now. With his, he's got fake horse racing scams on the go. He's got fake real estate scams, like Oriel just mentioned. And another one, which I liked, which not a lot of detail on, but it says he goes, he arranges business meetings with people, presumably takes some money off them, and then he fakes having a seizure in the meeting. So then, like, once he's, like, got all the money and stuff in his bag, doesn't finish the deal, an ambulance comes and takes him off. You see you later.
One of them seizures where you won't let anything go. Yeah, you know, like, your hand, like, clinches up, so you're, like, you're there with your hand clasped on your bag full of cash.
I know the type. I know the type.
Foam coming out your mouth. Well, with a menthol in his mouth and just takes a swig of his coke. Shits himself just
for a laugh. Yeah.
Just you've got to make it realistic, can't you?
Well, them jeans he's got on, you mass smells and everything. So he's laughing, isn't he, really?
There's a lot of this going on. You've got to remember, like, the 20s, gangsters, con men in America. There's a lot of crime around. Mm-hmm. It's
Tommy guns.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of them in there.
Tommy guns.
Tommy guns. Spud guns. Yeah. They were popular back then.
Tony. This town ain't big enough for the both of us. Bang, bang.
That's what? Can't do that accent and go bang, bang. Sounding like a bricket. Going from bloody Bronx to that. Hey, Tony, bang, bang. Sounds legit.
He whacked him.
Oh, right, yeah. With a violin.
Do you reckon, right? He was absolutely shit scared of his dad.
I think so.
And, like, that was the worst thing. Not a gangster turning up with a Tommy gun in a violin case. But it was his dad turning up with a violin case.
A violin in a Tommy gun case. Yes.
Or a gun built into a violin.
He's like, no! When the first gangster ever tried getting his money back, he turned up with violin case. You're like, no! Fucking hell, no! No! And then he opened it up and pulled the Tommy gun out. Like, oh, it's just a gun.
Yeah. Oh, for you. Christ, I shit myself then.
Thought we're getting a viola to the face again.
Still getting splinters out from first experience.
Well, he's doing all right. And he's a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde character, because around this time as well, even though he's doing all these scams and criminal activities, he marries a pretty Kansas woman by the name of Roberta Narette.
Hey. Finds himself a woman. Because he is, have we mentioned he's a bit of a ladies' man?
Oh, yeah. He is a ladies' man.
He gets his end away when he wants.
He does. He shags anything that moves when he wants, where he wants, and how he likes it.
But what he does is he keeps his family very separate. It's like a secret family almost. And he gives them, he pours his money onto it. Like, they have everything that they could ever wish for.
I think it's a mixture of having money and his charisma.
Yeah.
Because the best looking man in the world? Probably not. But he has the...
Oh, it's all about the charisma, isn't it?
Yeah. It's all about his allure, because he's quite intelligent. Yeah. And I think a big thing with him as well, he like really examines people, he understands people's behaviour. And I think that kind of intellect makes him quite sexy.
Mm. And sexy. Being able to tap into that knowledge as well. Being able to take advantage of people.
Very analytical.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not all sweetness and light.
He'll watch a woman for a few hours before I'm watching her get a lemon drizzle.
Yeah.
And then next day, he'll go in shop with a lemon drizzle.
Yeah.
Drizzle.
Who calls cake
drizzle? Sounds like when you got
to... That's the kind of detail that he goes into.
He knows how many sugars she has in brews and stuff like that.
He'll be like that. Oh.
You just sound
how
like a
stalker.
How
funny that you have the same amount of sugar in your tea as
me. Two sugars in your tea? Me too.
Oh,
let me just open me a lemon drizzle.
King drizzle.
That's your favourite. Oh, just so happens I've got two pieces. Come and sit with me.
Fancy a shag?
Yeah. Oh, you like whips and chains, do you? You'll never guess what I've got in my bag.
What?
My butties. My flask.
I'm a train spotter.
I've got a thermos, I can spank you with it though. Well, as well as having his little family, he does have a mistress by the name of May Schiegel.
Oh yeah.
It's a good name.
Schiegel.
Again.
I bet he couldn't say it either.
We're not going into detail on her. But then she say she was.
She just keep. She every time she told him his name, she was running really fast. What's your name, May? May what? Schiegel. So will you stop while you tell me your name? What is it?
Anyway.
That was silly.
May herself was a millionaire. But she'd made her millions from running prostitutes.
Running fast and not telling people at her.
Anyway, we should leave that there.
I think with his wife as well, Roberta.
Oh yeah, good old Roberta.
Roberta, darling.
They definitely become somewhat of a partnership because he tells her, and he's open after a while about his scams.
The way he's making his money.
Yeah, he says he never really does anything illegal. He just assists people that are doing things illegal. And I think she knows and understands that she's happy because she's getting new handbags every
Listen,
week.
Right, if you're at home and you're getting a good fucking wadge of housekeeping money, you're not asking questions, are you?
No, she's happy to turn a blind eye.
You go to work, dear. Right. I'll stay at home.
You look after yourself.
You make it, I'll spend it.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bit more than that. They have money hidden all over the United States, different safety deposit boxes. She holds the keys. I think she understands his dealings and she swears to protect him.
She's sort of complicit but ignorant at the same time.
Yeah, ignorance is bliss. Because, I mean, they're travelling together under pseudonyms and, you know, they start travelling as Mr. and Mrs. Von Kelser. There's another one.
Talk about, you think he'd go for like Smith or Brown or, you know, like a blending
he's imaginative. He's imaginative. He's imaginary. I mean, he comes up with some great ones.
It's a lot easier.
C.H. Baxter, Rudolf Halberder, Victor Gross, Frank Gardner, Helmut Strode.
What?
And Pierre Devon.
Love that.
It's a lot easier trace Victor Gross and Helmut Strode than it is John Smith, You know what I mean? It's all I'm saying. Count Von Clacker.
But she's obviously an enemy because she's got to go with the names as well at the times. But the bouncing back and forth, Europe to America, and he gets involved.
From Paris.
In the disco wagon in my heart. He's bumping for love. Bumping for love.
With a crate full of bathtub gin. Because he gets into a bit of alcohol smuggling.
Is he doing moonshine?
Oh, he's doing moonshine.
Is it bootlegging?
Bringing it from Europe. He's doing booze rum.
He's
going back to Europe, getting a load of booze.
Well, it's prohibition, isn't it?
Yeah, prohibition. And in the meantime as well, in 1922, they have a little baby girl.
Nice.
Baby girl. Everyone likes babies.
Betty Jean. But he has a little nickname for her. Skeezux.
What?
Did you sneeze?
Bless you.
Skeezux, he calls her. S-K-E-E-Z-X.
This lad's clearly had a heavy hit on the head as a child.
What, with a violin?
Yeah. Fancy that.
I'm going to call my daughter.
Skeezux, he calls her. But he's still mixing with, like we said, the actors and the high class.
Oh, yeah.
And one day...
Top people.
One night he goes to a play.
Cultured, vulture.
Yes, exactly. And so much so he's mixing with these. He goes backstage afterwards.
Ooh, backstage
chatting
pass.
With a few of the actors. And he's in the dressing rooms. They're having a chat, having a bit of a laugh. And he pops on one of the false beards.
He just got in his coat pocket.
No, all the...
One of the actors. I thought he meant one of his... disguises.
No. So they have a bit of a giggle, and next minute he puts some eyebrows on, some bushy eyebrows. Puts a bit of makeup. You know, one of the other actors coming. Yeah. Come on, put this hat on. And then he goes out to the after party where his wife is. She doesn't recognise him.
Oh well.
Well, for Victor, that's a light bulb. Yeah. That is a light bulb. Oh my! Not even recognise. Never mind changing my name. My own wife doesn't recognise me. From that moment on, wherever they travel, he takes 12 trunks of fancy dress everywhere he goes.
That's ridiculous.
No, 12 big trunks.
Yes, I'm here, Helmut Strode, with my 12 trunks.
He regularly dressed up as a rabbi, bellboys,
bell bottom.
I'm going to wonder whether you're a clown.
What the fuck?
Just going up.
What going, we can
yeah. I'm just going looking at an house, love, that I'm going to swindle the money from them. They won't suspect if I turn up as Encore the Clown, will they?
Did he have a
Here he is, Ruffles.
Did he have big fucking curly sits? Glue them on. Yes, I am a rabbi.
One of the massive hats that looks like a cat's bed. With all these wads of cash hidden
I'll
in it.
I'll tell you what, he's outlandish. Insane.
Exactly.
He's
exactly. And I just don't, the clown's the one for me.
No.
Anyway, yeah. Sir, can I take your name for your visit? Yeah, Mr. Ruffles, Mr. Jingles.
Coco.
Well, you don't want to be halfway through mid-conversation pulling out some bloody sausage dog, do you?
What's he doing? He turns up in a... turn up in a car with massive wheels.
Yeah.
Got bits falling off it. Just going closing a deal, love.
He was just about to give me the $20,000 in bonds and a custard pie in. I just couldn't help it. I couldn't help it. I squirted him with me flour.
With this in mind, it's time now for the count to embark upon the big one.
His first big one,
wasn't it?
Because there are a number of big swindles.
Yeah,
that
I'm just billing it as the
it
big one.
It is the big one. It is the big one.
Because I'm calling it the big one based on size of the erection.
Yes. I like it. Before we do talk about this, though, I didn't mention before, Betty, his daughter, she grew up getting used to this life.
Of madness.
Yeah, just waking up in the middle of the night, all bags were packed, 14 trunks of fancy dress. Come on, we're going, because he's been rumbled again, or he's ripped somebody off. They've got to move on to the next town in America. And she's just said the constant name changing as well, moving town to town. Oh, overall, she goes to 37 different schools.
What on earth?
Just bouncing around all over
the shop. Jesus, what?
It's a good job Papa's a millionaire, isn't it?
And from a young age, he actually taught her Morse code so that he could give her secret messages when necessary.
Brilliant.
So they'd have certain codes and he'd tap them out on his hand so he could say, like, don't say anything. If you ask any questions, don't say anything, because, you know, he might be alluding them that the name's different or whatever. And also to tell her to leave the room, you know, go up to your bedroom if somebody was at the house, he'd tap it out on his hand. But there's one occasion when she says that she wakes up in the middle of the night and once again, they're on a train. All the luggage is there. Her mum's there, sat across.
I'll tell you what, he must have had a pair of fucking biceps on him, the fella.
You've got that much money. No, they've got staff.
All right,
they've
I was going to say.
So she's sat in this carriage with her mum, all the luggage and everything's there. Where's dad? She looks up. She looks out the window. Her dad, right, who Victor's, being wheeled in. In a wheelchair with a floppy hat on, a beard, and his leg in a cast.
Fuck off. Are you joking?
I'm not joking. They've had to leave Quick Sticks, and he's obviously been identified by the police. Yeah. So he gets his fancy dress on. He's been in trunks. He's got his gear on. Come on, wheels him on in a wheelchair. They've got stuff for every
what
kind of scenario,
called?
This lot.
I know, he's coming across between Ironside and Indiana Jones. Floppy hat and wheelchair bound. What is going on?
Oh, it's brilliant. I love it.
But yes, the big one.
So yeah,
we had to get
that
in just before. They're back in Europe now, aren't they?
To France for the big one.
Not just France, but the capital, Gay Paris.
Gay Paris.
Not again.
And he's got his mate with him, hasn't he?
Dapper Dan.
Old Dapper Dan.
The lion taming man.
Yes.
Dapper Dan. The best rapper in Paris.
So they're in Paris. Saturday night's cafe.
Oui, oui.
Oui, oui. Mulls Frit.
Mangez tout.
Yes. Cheap bottle of Blanc.
In a craft.
Dipping a baguette in a bin.
We've heard that one before, haven't we?
But yes, they're sat there and they're reading the local paper. Victor sees an article in there.
There's been a lot of speculation about the upkeep of the tower and its position in the city. It was expensive to maintain. And repair, and I think the article made comment on the potential removal of it eventually.
Which was nonsense, really, wasn't it? They were never going to remove it, but, you know, a bit of sensationalism within the article that alluded to maybe, yeah, we should rip it down, get rid of it.
I tell you what we'll do with it. We'll scrap it off.
Well, what does Victor, reading this...
Victor sees dollar bills, y'all.
Ding, ding, light bulb, once again. I've got an idea.
Where there's muck, there's brass.
Yes.
That's exactly what he said.
But he doesn't rush in. He does a bit of preparation. So he wants to make a really good job of this. So he starts researching what he would need to convince some scrap metal merchants that this is a genuine opportunity to buy the Eiffel Tower for scrap.
So a new persona that would be believable that he was the man in charge of scrapping the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
So he gets
this is unbelievable.
This is outrageous.
Gets a fake ID.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not talking buying booze underage. He gets false stationery made.
Oh.
It's got the government emblem in the top corner. You know, it's got watermarks in it.
Yeah.
You know, real
letterheads.
Letterheads.
Business cards.
Yeah.
Snow globe. One of them pens that you turn and a bikini comes off.
Stress ball.
Yeah.
Corkboard for, you know, for all his bits and bobs.
Yeah, he sets up. He's got staples, hasn't he?
Pen holder.
Yeah, pen holder. Got all gear. Gets a couple of highlighters. Old punch.
Little
stapler.
Mini calendar with all his personal photos in it for each month.
Yeah.
Rolodex.
Yeah. All his business cards.
Got the full works. He's
all
got
that
full
stuff.
Works.
Yeah.
Work phone, laptop.
He had an Archidemus's balls. Right. But, right, it were, they didn't move, and it were called Chuck Norris's balls.
They were just solidly in place.
They were just solidly snug.
Covered in denim.
Yeah.
Oh, and he had his spur pants, his spur caps.
Yeah, yeah, covered full of.
But most important of all his purchases from Staples was the paper that had the emblem of the government department in charge of public buildings.
Ooh.
Because that, after all, what the Eiffel Tower is, it's a
public building. So he's gone to town.
So once he's got his persona, his stationery, his cork pinboard in place, he invites a small group of scrap metal dealers to a very confidential meeting at a very expensive hotel in Paris. And it's called the Crillon Hotel.
Ooh.
Now, this was well known as being a place where the government
officials
would hold meetings.
Yes, yes.
You know, so he's not skimping.
No.
You know, he's got some out
there.
He's got speculator to accumulate.
Agreed.
Now, in this meeting, he is looking to identify his mark. He's looking for someone who's weak, someone who's impressionable, someone who's got plenty of money, but looks like they may be gullible.
Yeah.
And believe his story.
Mm.
So he's working the room. He's giving them a really convincing backstory that the upkeep of the Eiffel Tower is too expensive for Paris and for the taxpayers, and that the French government wishes to sell it for scrap. Now, knowing that this will be a public outcry, he says this is totally confidential.
Top secret, lads. Top secret. Keep it under your hats.
Yeah.
But he, and he alone, is responsible for selecting the lucky company.
Like the best metal dealers around. He bigs them up a little bit, doesn't he?
7,000 tonnes of scrap metal.
It's a bloody lot, that.
7,000 tonnes. Not messing about.
No, God no. That bloke who comes round with his truck on a Sunday and have a
rag
job,
and bone! Rag and bone! Yeah, there, get your spanner out, you can have this.
Got 6 Stanley knives as well, chuck them in.
I don't know how many people throw away washing machines, but they've always got washing machines on the back of them trucks.
So he targets a guy, doesn't he, out of this group. He was looking for someone that's quite weak-willed and easy.
He finds his mark.
That would fall for it quite easily.
Because they all have to put the bids in, don't they?
Yeah.
For the metal, but it doesn't matter who puts the biggest bid in.
It's
the character that he's going to go for.
And that's what's really clever about Ludwig, I think, because he literally analysed these people and he learnt the persona and everything.
Yeah.
And he eventually settles on a chap called André Poisson.
Which I think is great because he translates as André Fish.
Does it? No, that I didn't know. André Fish.
André Fish, gullible scrap man.
Yeah.
And he seemed to be quite an insecure chap, didn't he?
Insecure,
but keen to rise up with the Parisian.
Yeah, he's looking to, work his way up the greasy pole into being a bigwig.
There's something fishy going on.
Apparently.
he spins the yarn that, you know, right, listen, the deal's yours. You can take the Eiffel Tower.
If.
But, you know what I mean? I'm only a government official. They don't really pay me that much. Yeah. You know, dropping the hints for a bit of a bribe to get it.
Yeah.
So, bearing in mind, this lad does not own the Eiffel Tower. He has no place to sell the Eiffel Tower. He's bloody sold the Eiffel Tower, and he's got a bit of cream on top because the lad's bribed him to buy the Eiffel Tower that he doesn't even own.
Well, that's what you call a top quality con man, isn't it?
Is it?
Well, Fish agrees. He says, I'll give you the bribe and I'll give you the money for the sale.
Unbelievable. Up front.
Yeah. So what does old Count Lustig do once he receives payment?
Buggers off.
He fucks right off.
Goes back to Austria, doesn't he?
I'm going to Austria. Yeah. See you later.
Fuck you lot.
Bye bye. Your fish and chips. You. I'm off.
Well, I think it's interesting.
Fish is out of water here. Because he does not know what to do.
Jesus Christ.
Because he must be like trying to get hold of Victor. He was trying to get hold of Victor. Like, what the bloody hell? Yeah. I've just bought the bloody Eiffel Tower. I bet he's turning up with his lads. Yeah. Ratchets. What's going on? Come on.
I'm doing it.
A lot of Chinese taking photos. Come on, lads. Come on, get out. This is... I own this.
What's funny about that is
all them model Eiffel Towers there. I've got copyright to them now, boys. I'll be taking 20% of them. Little stalls all around. Come on, bugger off.
I think the funny thing about that though is Poisson or Mr. Fish. He doesn't even report to the police. It doesn't go to the newspaper. He's quite ashamed,
he's
isn't
totally
he?
Totally ashamed.
Because he's trying to like work his way through the business rank.
He ain't got a receipt.
He's not got a receipt. Well, as he thought.
Yeah. You can't get a refund without a receipt.
Yeah.
And so, he knows he's fucked up right
now. I mean, but do you know what? I think the audacity...
not gone out hell.
No.
The audacity of Victor at this stage, he's obviously keeping an eye on the newspapers and stuff and thinking, oh, yeah, I'm not seeing anything here. And he knew that he wouldn't report it as well.
Yeah. They're in Austria for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Feet up on the old bubbly. Living it up, him and Dapper Dave.
They're having the best time of their bloody life.
2 weeks past and still nothing in the papers.
Wee.
He knows. He's not even reported this, right? Come on, boys. We're back to Paris.
Let's go.
I'm going to sell that tower again.
The audacity of the guy, though.
He goes back to Paris and sells the Eiffel Tower again.
Yeah.
He gets another 5 scrap merchants together.
Exact same setup.
Well, he's got a lot of letter-headed paper on him. Yeah. He's got his business card. He's still got his bloody cork notice board in his suitcase. He might as well use it. So he goes back to the same hotel, gets a lot more in, and again, sells it again, does the same treat, but this time, doesn't quite get away with it.
It doesn't quite
Shit goes down
work
to a degree,
out.
Doesn't it?
Well, almost, though.
Yeah. He ends up getting reported to the police and going back to America, I believe.
So he almost sells the Eiffel Tower for the second
time. He sells it once, which is good.
Yeah.
And then he nearly sells it twice.
But he goes straight from, I'd say, one of his biggest and most outlandish efforts to one of his most inventive.
Well, I'd say madcap. Yeah, I love it. Don't get me wrong.
I think it's fantastic.
Fucking bananas.
I don't know if I like this one better, to be honest.
I know. Because the cheek of him.
He gets back to America and he needs a new scam now. I mean, he's making shitloads of money, this lad. He can't give up the ghost, can he? No. He can't just live on the fruit.
I think he's got the buzz, hasn't he? It's the thrill.
He's got loads
of
money.
He's rolling in
But like you said, it's the buzz. He's chasing the dragon. Yeah. So, you know, once you've just sold the Eiffel Tower to somebody, that's a bloody big dragon to chase.
So he comes up with a scheme to make some money boxes. Now, we're not talking piggy banks.
We're on about big, old, real
We're talking boxes. About money laundering machines, or the Romanian box, as
the
it's referred
Romanian
to.
Romanian box?
Yes.
And basically, Victor, he gets some big wooden boxes and he takes them out on the road to other gangsters, con men, other even ordinary wealthy businessmen. And he says...
2 foot in length.
Oh.
9 inches wide.
What are you talking about? His cock, then? What a wank.
Yeah, Oriel, you've got a one-track mind. Seriously.
What a wang. 2 foot in length, his box.
All right.
Yeah.
And what about his balls?
His love box.
2 foot in length, 9 inch wide, 1 foot deep. We've got a picture here, actually. We can
we'll
spread it.
We'll put it online.
Yeah, so what these boxes do is to print money. Magically print money.
Unbelievable, this.
Now, how do they magically print money? Well, he's put a bit of radium. He's gone nuclear. It's a nuclear-powered money laundering machine, which for the time, you know, that was blowing people's minds away. Yeah, that's enough. Fuck me, this is like magical.
We've got to remember this like can tell a tale.
Yeah, oh yeah.
He could tell a really good story. He's a good storyteller. And he does. He says during the First World War that the inventor of this box was held by the Germans to reproduce American bills so that they could flood America with false notes and crash their economy.
Yeah.
After the war had finished, he escaped and the inventor ended up living at his house with his dad.
In Czechoslovakia.
In Czechoslovakia, he managed to produce this chemical method of duplication. After he'd then died at his father's house, Victor himself had found the box and the formula and managed to reproduce.
God lad.
So he had this one box under his arm and off he went on the cruise ships again. He loved the cruise ship.
Oh, God, well, who doesn't?
On bingo. Bloody cabaret night and all
unless
that.
You're
doing
on the
all
bloody
that.
Titanic or the Costa Concordia. It's all fucking gravy.
So he's with his box and he's smoothing up to people saying, hey, have a look at this.
Now, what he does is, he says that these boxes print $100 bills.
Dollar bills, y'all.
He doesn't go in low. He doesn't go 10, 20, no, no. 5.
$100 bill, y'all.
Goes straight for the jugular, doesn't
he? Yeah, raining bills.
You know, and what he does is, in this box, it's not an empty box. He sets it up, so he's got a few actual $100 bills in there.
Yeah.
So he demonstrates it to the potential customer and goes, you know, puts in a bit of blank paper, you know, turns some cogs, flashing dials. You know, a bit Heath Robinson.
It's got to be a bit wet behind ears to fall for that.
Oh, next thing, out it comes. A real $100 bill.
You stick a blank piece of paper in, turn it knob, and a $100 bill comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, but it goes like this. Whizz bot. Whizz bot.
Making noises on the table.
Like him clicking it.
Woo, woo.
That's just the radium warming up.
Stabbing his foot.
There he comes.
So it's like one of his ex-missus running past.
So it spits $100 bill out, and these folks are like, Jesus, bloody Christ!
It's brilliant.
The key here is, though, the key is that you can't just pump out a load of $100 bills.
No.
Whoa, steady yourself. You have to wait 6 hours between printing each bill. So that gives him enough time then. Couple of days.
He's got footing it away.
He'll know what he's doing. He won't sell it until, you know, they're a day from... Yeah. Getting into port, and they'll put you maybe a couple of grand in there in dollar bills, if that. So
yeah,
he's gone, he's hot footed, out of town, can't see for dust. He's gone. There is one. Now he sells a number of these. The amount of people that fall for this is ridiculous. But there is one time when I think he's in Chicago,
yeah,
and he's recognised. He's recognised now. This bloke comes over, Mr. Lipsip, what's his name?
No, I'm leaving that in.
Was he a... Did
do you mean Lustig?
Lustig?
Because Oriel's already called him Ludwig.
God's sake.
What's his name? Yeah, Lustig? Victor!
Yeah.
Hey, Victor! And at this point, I bet he's thinking, oh, shit, fuck. I sold him one of them boxes. Bastard, what am I going to do here? This guy comes running over, he says, Victor! Yeah.
You can't get a girl, but your best friend can. We're haunted by Robbie Williams.
Is that an Alexa? Tell her, shut her gob, I've told her. Alexa, shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up.
I thought she'd gone in for a fag. That was ridiculous. I just started playing Robbie Williams for no reason. She's a typical bird, isn't she, Jesus? Up and down like a bride's nighty. Either shut up or get out.
So anyway, this guy comes running over. Victor. And he's thinking, shit, I sold him one of them boxes. What am I going to do here? He comes over, he said, Victor, you're not going to believe this. That bloody counterfeit box naughty maker, you got me.
It's broke.
It's broke. I cocked up dinner. I cocked up. Fourth hour, I printed another note, didn't I? Now it's just blank paper coming out. He said, victim, jump on this straight away.
I told you.
6 hours. 6 hours, and then you'll get another note. You've cocked it up, you broke it. It's knackered. What are you going to do now? There's only one thing you can do. I can sell you another one if you want. Cost you 25 grand. Yeah, all right then. Yeah, he buys another one for 25 grand. So he spent 50 grand on two boxes. It's like full of paper. Now, there's a list here of a few people that he sold them to.
Oh, go on.
There was some pool hall owners. They're always a bit of a dodgy place, aren't they?
Yeah.
43 grand they paid for those. A Chicago businessman, 25 he paid for his. A couple of merchants, 10 grand they paid
for
those.
They got in there, we're lucky.
A gambling syndicate, 46 grand they paid for those.
Jesus.
And then a banker, 100 grand he paid for his box. A box full of paper.
Ridiculous.
I tell you what.
And when we're talking,
when
we're talking now, 1920s.
Yeah, the 20s.
This lad is making some. So that's millions. Yeah.
It is
in comparison.
It's a lot. It's a real massive amount of money. He's brave though, and because he's not only selling them to sort of ordinary members of the public, he's selling them to other criminals.
Yeah,
you know, and they could easily come and, you know, find him and kill him, but because of these masters of disguise, because
exactly.
They bought it off a clown or a rabbi.
Yeah,
or
a bloke with some glasses and a plastic nose and a moustache.
You know, he just gets away with it every time.
The thing is, he is arrested a number of times and he is caught in relation to these boxes. Yeah. But the thing is, he's dealing with cash all the time. Apparently, he has a silk suit jacket.
TL.
That has 15 grand sold into it at all times he wears that.
His emergency, he's put money.
15 grand, that's like, like 200 grand in today's money. I don't know, I'm just guessing.
I know most lads have got like 100 quid in the wallet that the wife don't know about. You know?
he's one cool bastard, isn't he?
Oh, he's a smooth operator, like I said before. So he does get arrested a number of times, but he always bribes his way out of it.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, guess what I've got in here? 10 grand, there you go, so you're later.
And that's like, and it's nothing to him really, you know, it's not hurting him. He goes into partnership now with a couple of fellas from Nebraska.
Nebraska,
so
man.
Instead of having pretend printing money boxes, they actually build a real counterfeit machine.
This turns into an operation beyond comprehension.
It gets to the point where they're on the verge of bringing the economy to its knees.
Yeah.
They're printing that much money, and it's such good quality money. He's producing the best quality $100 bills that have ever been counterfeited.
You can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
Like the shitty ones, the like Abe Lincoln just drawn on with a pencil. just crayons.
They're like printed triangle shapes, squares,
or
diamonds, the occasional.
Cutting's all to cop. Parallelograms going out. Nobody's business.
Just screw it up a bit.
Just put a scrunchie. Nobody will know. But they sell a $100 bill will cost you $30.
Not bad, is it?
It's not too bad, is it?
I'd be in.
Yeah.
I'd be in, yeah. Count me in.
Yeah, take my money. The net's closing in now. Government officials are onto him. In 1931, he goes on a business trip.
Well, you've got to, haven't you?
Right.
Squint the old fingers there. Business trip to South America. Now, on his return... There is a chief waiting for him at the border. A police chief.
Oh, right. I thought you were an Indian.
I did.
How?
How? How do you make your money boxes? He's there, waiting for him. Handcuffed, back of the van. You'd nicked.
Nicked, sonny.
However, on the way to the station, they get chatting.
Oh my god.
You know who he is, getting into people's ears.
Well, you've got to.
A word on your shoulder.
A little chinwag.
Shoulder to cry on. And the police chief managed to reveal. How he gets this information out of him so quickly, I don't know. But he manages to reveal that he's in debt. He's 50 grand in debt. And he's actually been taken some money from the council out of the police funds.
Oh.
This is the police chief. And he's
naughty
in a bit of
boy.
Shit. So Victor says,
I can help you out.
I can help you this.
I can help you out, sunshine.
If you just have a look in my bag, you'll find a money box. He sells the police chief one of his money boxes and gets him to set him free.
Oh, fucking hell.
He uncuffs him and sells him a money box for 25 grand.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, bribes him off.
He doesn't even give him. He sells him for 20, £25,000. He said, this will solve all your problems, mate. This will solve all your problems.
The audacity of the guy.
He just must be getting like a top buzz off this.
Unbelievable. But we're talking about a police chief here. We're not messing about. So a couple of months later, he's hiding out somewhere in America. I don't know where. And the police chief hunts him down, finds him, holds him at gunpoint. To which point... Victor just gives him £50,000 with an apology. Sorry, mate. Yeah. But
it turns out that it's counterfeit money.
It's counterfeit money. He's got £15,000 in real notes in his jacket. Don't give him that. £50,000 in fake notes. Police chief on his way home gets pulled over, doesn't he? £50,000 worth of counterfeit notes gets arrested.
Good lad.
Oh, Victor's laughing his cock off.
Well, that's what you see that these. Fucking whiter than white coppers.
They're all
this is
bent.
What you get if you're bent. You get your comeuppance.
You do. Karma runs its course.
He finally gets the tug on his collar in 1935 when he's ordered to put your hands in the air, Victor.
Oosh.
He actually gets caught. One of his mistresses.
Yeah.
He's,
this is
he's,
it.
I mean, him and Muriel, Maud. Sandra, what's she called, his wife?
Roberta,
that's her. They've gone separate ways now.
Yeah.
Messy divorce.
Well, yeah.
He's settled it with loads of counterfeit cash.
He's shagging about all the time.
Well, what it is, remember I told you he'd been knocking off the millionaire prostitute boss, Billy May.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's continued to be knocking her off for many years.
Yeah.
But she's getting a bit old.
Oh, is she a bit haggard? Time for something new.
And he starts knocking off one of the money printing machine men who he's teamed up with. He starts knocking off his mistress.
Oh.
Now.
Love triangle.
She's not happy. She's not happy. I've been with you since the very beginning.
Yeah.
And you're out there shagging these young'uns. You're supposed to be shagging me, aren't you, wife?
Yeah.
Well, what? A woman scorned.
Yeah, but not only that, he conned her to £50,000 in fake bonds.
He can't help himself, can he? Do you know what he's like? He's like a fucking, what they call, shoplifter.
Oh, yeah.
No, when they just can't help themselves and they go in shop nicking. Like that Richard Madeley off telly. He were at it, weren't he?
Really?
He's go shop, yeah.
Impulsive stealer.
Yeah, like, even though he's like got loads of money, he used to be a shoplifting all
the time. Oh, I do not. I always get a coffee in Tesco.
You admitted to shoplifting coffees.
Yeah. Self checkout.
When I'm going round, I always get a coffee. I think you're supposed to pay for it on the way out, but I just pop it in the bin when I get to the till.
Self checkout though. It's another one. The things you can get through that thing. I mean, I'm not saying you can get a telly through, but I genuinely don't remember the last time I paid for a Christmas or birthday card.
I've not paid for any greeting cards.
They're very, very easy to get through self-checkout because they weigh nothing.
Yeah. I'm shocked by these.
Tesco, do not report me to the police, please.
I'm shocked by these revelations. Well, anyway, she is not happy. So she rings the police, basically, and says, I'll tell you where he is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she does. They arrest him, and where do they keep him? They keep him in the inescapable federal detention centre in Manhattan.
Fancy that.
However, what happens next?
He escapes!
He escapes!
Surprise, he escapes!
Because he's a very resourceful man and he fashions a rope from his bed sheets.
Yay!
And he does well. He cuts through the bars on his window and he swings down like an everyday Tarzan coming down.
Apparently, as he's coming down the wall, there are people, because this is a central prison.
There's people all around.
There are people looking as he comes down, so he pretends to be cleaning the windows.
On his own made bed sheet roll.
Yeah. With his chamois. Spit shine the windows on the way down, gets to the bottom and legs it through town.
Well, what he says in the reports is, as he lowers himself down, he lands gracefully on his feet. He gives his audience a polite bow and then sprints away like a deer.
It's difficult to dislike him, isn't it?
He's just so cunning. It's almost inspirational.
Well, he was on the run for 2 months, all in all, before being caught again, tracked down in a car chase.
He was caught.
Cop car.
Oh.
Cops, he was on.
Welcome to Police Chases USA.
Victor serial fraudster Victor Hatutimuna Luna Litzberg thought he could get away in his clown car. Little did he know that he was being followed by New York's top cops. Drove him off the road and clamped his hand in clasps.
Well, for 9 blocks, their vehicles rode neck to neck.
He's pressed his last dollar. Hope he likes porridge.
The police have executed an excellent stoppage maneuver.
Many, many hours of training go into this kind of exercise.
The agents pull their service weapons.
Oh, do they now?
What weapons?
Their service weapons.
Truncheons, not truncheons. There is it, guns.
No, it's guns.
Coshes.
Coshes. Except for Warnick Mack, who had a violin, shit himself. So he's finally caught. They've got him in clasps.
Got him in what?
Clasps.
Clasps? You mean handcuffs?
Yeah.
Because when the fuck did you arrest someone in clasps?
Why not? Iron clasps. They got him in irons.
Well, I'll go with they've got him in irons, but clasps.
Yeah. I just think of like...
Yeah, what hold your trousers
oh,
up?
Lobsters.
Well, he didn't
claw.
Need them because he had jeans.
Yeah, we had them.
Chuck Norris jeans. Hi, Chuck.
He had his kegs on.
I'm just getting all confused.
Fucking clasps. Handcuffs.
Handcuffs. They got him in handcuffs.
Cuffed him up.
And this time they weren't letting him escape.
No.
A lock and key.
They didn't.
And he goes to trial.
He does.
Yeah, Willie Williams testifies against Victor.
Whoa.
He steps up, he's in the dock in court.
The witness stand,
giving his testimony, at which point Victor stands up halfway through his testimony and says, "Right, let's get it over with. I just wanted to see if the rat would squeal on the stand."
Oh.
Puts his arms out. Guilty.
What a guy.
Guilty.
Showman to the end.
Yeah.
Well, at that point, one of the Secret Service agents whispers over to Victor, "Count, you are the smoothest con man that ever lived."
Yeah.
Fancy that.
And he's charged and sentenced to 15 years for his Connery exploits and robbing and stealing and being a general naughty, naughty boy, cheating people out of money.
Sean
and
an waving extra at him.
5 years for escaping from his previous cell. So all in all, 20 years in the famous Alcatraz.
Yeah. He steps onto Alcatraz Island. They search him for concealed blades, springs, and other escape
tactics. Springs? We're going to put them on his boots, not bent.
Pick locks. Pick a lock with a spring.
Very cunning.
But he hasn't got
any. Go-go gadget shoes.
They throw him into the showers and hose him down with freezing seawater.
Ooh.
They then march him along the main corridor, naked,
known
as Broadway. And then you can imagine, you've seen it on the film, all the banging the metal cups. No, not singing New Bloody New York.
He's on Broadway, why? He might as well for one last time. Arm around guards doing can-can with spuds out.
It's humiliation. Well, Victor, he doesn't do himself any favours in prison because he comes across as a bit of a hypochondriac.
All right.
By December the 7th of 1946, he'd made over 1,190 medical requests at the prison hospital and filled out for over 507 prescriptions. And the prison guards, they all just thought he was faking it as part of an escape plan.
Right.
But what they didn't really believe was that he was actually ill. Well, eventually he convinces them that he's ill and they decide, okay, we will transfer you to a secure facility in Springfield in Missouri. However, when he gets there, lad's not taking it, drops dead.
Yeah.
Pneumonia.
Shit.
When they filled his death certificate in, what do you think they put down as his occupation?
Oh, go on.
Apprentice salesman.
Hey!
And on that note, there you go.
Well, very good.
What a great guy.
He's all right, old Victor. I've got
him. It was an interesting tale.
Yeah.
I feel inspired by him. I think it was.
You're gonna go and start.
I'm gonna go out on Rob now. Well, that's it, isn't it?
So there we go. Old Victor Lemsip.
Victor Lemsip. He's our man.
There we go, Victor Lemsip. What a guy! What a swindler! What a cunning cat he was.
Helmut Strode. I like it. We went from Helmut Strode to Frank Gardner.
From from a clown to a bloody policeman.
You've got to mix it up, haven't you?
Well, we hope you've all enjoyed it. As all, right, just do us a favour and get us a review on iTunes.
That is your number one task.
Yes.
As loyal listeners.
Please give us a review on
iTunes. Five stars
only.
Don't bother.
If you're listening to this on iTunes right now, then it's very likely, it's very easy, should I say.
Write a review if you want. If you can't, just click on the 5-star.
That's it. It's as easy as that.
Tell your friends about us.
Yeah, tell your friends.
All your friends. Like even the wrong uns.
Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. As always, if you've got any products that you want us to promote.
We'll happily promote them.
Yeah, we will do. Like, you know, Chuck listened to the last episode. He was straight on blower.
He
couldn't help himself.
No.
He was like, hiya! When he picked the phone up. I was like, hiya, all right.
Bruce Lee's yet to get in touch with us. Bruce Lee's yet to get in touch with us.
Beyond the grave.
Beyond the grave. His son called Jet Lee.
No, he's dead as well, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah,
Christ.
He's dead. They're all dead. There's only Jackie Chan left.
With his tuxedo on. That could be our next promotion. Tuxedos from slurs to tuxedos.
Jackie Chan endorsed tuxedo.
An odd job hat.
Yeah, oh, guy, that'd be great, then, wouldn't it? I wouldn't mind one of them. Suit me a top hat with
heads rolling
jeans.
All over the shop.
So, we've been talking Trap and Twaddle.
We've been talking Trap and Twaddle. I've been Christopher Brown.
I've been Oriole.
I'm not telling you who I am.
Ooh,
you have to guess.
Yeah, he's got a fake name now.
Yeah.
I've been.
I wonder why he had a bag of clown clothes in his car.
I've been Ivor Biggin.
It's Paul. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.